Thank God it's Free Range. You are listening to Free Range Radio Friday with your host, Michael Elves. Pour yourself a beverage and turn up the volume, because here on 101.5 UMFM, the weekend starts now.
Y'all, but my back's against the wall, and if I fall, I know I'ma get up and handle my business with the quickness you witness. I'm lifted, I'm moving past material gains. I'll change your restraint. You can miss me with the silly, I'm moving swiftly. I'm really too filthy, but I'm clean. Baptized in holy waters, life and promises lawless. You can talk with God, she won't think you swear. Please try not to stare. I know I'm hypnotic, mysterious math, and yes, I got ass. They out here trying to make a pass, trying to touch down. My spaceship already landed, I'm stranded, dancing and romancing. So don't front, take a drag from the blunt and pass it to a low one, low one, low one, low one. I got this small, small ride and I'm on my way. Jah is my guide, man, I care what you say, man, I care what you say, man, I care what you say. I got this small, small ride, man, I care what you say. Lifted in the deepest part of the Pacific, floating. Lifted in the deepest part of the Pacific, floating. Lifted in the deepest part of the Pacific, floating. Lifted in the deepest part of the Pacific. You ain't trying to be a slave, it's time to ride this wave. I know you hear that war drum, my sex ain't make his tears run. He asking where I come from. Been around the wave from Soweto to the Bay to Kampala to Kingston. This earth is my kingdom. I change like the season, and I don't need a reason. I just do this for fun. Take a drag from the blunt and pass it to a low one, low one, low one, low one. I got this small, small ride and I'm on my way. Jah is my guide, man, I care what you say, man, I care what you say, man, I care what you say. I got this small, small ride, man, I care what you say. I got this floating, lifted in the deepest part of the Pacific, floating. Lifted in the deepest part of the Pacific, floating. Lifted in the deepest part of the Pacific, floating. Lifted in the deepest part of the Pacific.
One oh 101.5 UMFM, this is Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. I'm Michael Elves, and kicking things off for us tonight, that was Oakland hip-hop duo Free, and that's FR333, the numbers 3. The Pacific from the Mind EP, which I just discovered on Bandcamp earlier this week, and I would strongly encourage you to go check out the other 3 tracks on that EP as well. Very great stuff. Speaking of great stuff, we got a busy show for you tonight. We are going to be talking to Iskwe in a few moments, just longlisted for the Polaris Prize 2018 award. She is in town this weekend playing the Winnipeg International Jazz Fest and Sakihiwe Fest. We had Jeremy Dutcher on last week. He's playing as well at Sakihiwe. I am thrilled that both of those artists made the Polaris Prize long list. We're going to be talking to Allie from Peach Kelly. We're going to be talking to Allie from Peach Kelly Pop, who are playing The Handsome Daughter on June 20th, i.e. next week. And then we're also going to be airing an interview that originally aired on Wednesday night on This Is 393, which is the Studio 393, a.k.a. Graffiti Gallery Programming. They did an interview with Cadence Weapon. And also, conveniently, coming to the Winnipeg Jazz Festival and also nominated for the Polaris Prize. Busy night, and we're going to get right into it. Ray Spoon has a new record coming out. Bodies of Water is the title of it. It'll be out in September on Cokes. And they are coming to town playing the Goodwill on September 20th. The first single from Bodies of Water is called Do Whatever the Heck You Want. Here it is. Stick around. Isque coming up next.
Should I be a man or a woman? What does that really mean? Should I be outside of it or something in between? Do whatever the heck you want. Do whatever the heck you want. Don't tell anyone what the heck to do. Do whatever the heck you want. Should I be an artist even after I turn 40? Should I become an accountant?
Well, returning to Winnipeg, Isque has two shows this weekend. One, a joint presentation of the Sakihiwe Fest and the Jazz Winnipeg Festival, Saturday, June 16th, 10:40 at Old Market Square. And then playing the Spence Neighborhood Block Party at Merck on Sunday at 4 p.m. And she joins us by phone. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So I was looking back. I think we talked around the release of The Fight Within about kind of the making of the record. But you've been crazy busy since then.
This is true.
You know, as someone who follows you on Instagram and other social media, I know that you've been up to a lot. Highlights of, you know, post record release, what's been kind of the things that have resonated with you or stuck with you the most?
Well, to be honest, I think one of the big things for me was going back to the Banff Center and getting to spend some more time writing, which I know sounds funny considering I had just released an album, but because I had been touring that album in advance to actually releasing it, for me it was really nice to sort of step away for those 2 weeks and regroup in a new setting and have kind of a new artistic vision to put in place. So that was a big highlight for me. And then we got to play in some pretty awesome places over the winter as well. So, you know, we're getting set to head back out on the road to tour the album for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was nice to be able to have these different bits that kind of chopped it up and spaced it out for me to keep it, you know, keep it interesting and fresh.
So you said you'd been playing those songs, you know, before you released the record.
Mm-hmm.
Was it kind of like you'd reached a point of exhaustion with playing them for a bit? Is that?
No, it wasn't so much that it wasn't exhaustion. It was more like I wanted to feel, I don't know what the right way would say it to say it, but I guess sort of just a rejuvenation in the songs themselves. Because, you know, like when you are playing the same material regularly, you know, it's a trick to be able to find ways to keep it fresh, even in how we perform it, right? So to keep ourselves, like we're telling a new story every single time. So it was just sort of, you know, that moment to regroup and be able to take the time to, you know, so that when we come back to them, they feel fresh and they feel brand new again.
So then going into the Banff Center and doing some writing there, did you find that it was a progression to what you'd done on The Fight Within, or were you looking to kind of like diverge from there?
A little bit of both. Like, part of my goal was to allow it to be what it, you know, what it became. And while we were there, there were a few things that happened in the media that really hit me hard. So some headlines that I felt were pretty, you know, not favorable and problematic in terms of how media were portraying certain events that were happening in society and specifically involving the community, the Indigenous community. And so I felt compelled to bring up those conversations. But then at the same time, I was also looking for new sounds and new ways to have chats and you know, to see where that would go and how that would manifest itself.
So when you're writing and responding to something that's going on, and I have to imagine maybe it was the Globe and Mail coverage.
You got it.
Yeah, that's what I figured. So something very specific and that happens at one point in time, and then obviously you're writing the songs.
Yeah.
How conscientious are you about like how quickly this can kind of be put out into the world as like part of the conversation around it? Or, you know, do you worry about kind of like, you know, let's say several months down the line, the impact or efficacy of that response?
Right. You know what? To be honest, I wish that I could say that if I waited 7 months, that it would be a thing of the past.
But it wouldn't.
But it's not going to be. So unfortunately, you know, holding off to release a record when the conversation surrounds a very specific moment in time, it's just that one moment in time that I'm drawing my personal reference from. But unfortunately, those things exist so frequently that, you know, we could be pulling from any particular moment. And you know, like the goal there is to actually have a bigger conversation as to where does this stem from? Where is it going? How are we, you know, being a part of changing that up so that, you know, media is being held accountable for their choice of wording and whatnot, but also where, you know, where these systemic differences exist and how we can, you know, raise the flag on those and be like, okay, this is a problem, and where does it start? Where is it going, and how do we change it, basically?
For you as a writer, I have to imagine language is particularly important.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because you have to have word choice. These are the words that are going to stick with the song. These are, you have a very, you know, fixed amount of words that you can use.
Yeah.
So then considering, you know, journalism or you know, other authorship, you must be particularly conscious of, you know, poor word choice.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I have an affinity for language. I really value how much emphasis there is on a word and how much power a word can hold. And, you know, how the delivery can be a part of that power and, you know, how one word in one language could have such extreme meaning. And then in another language, if you were to translate it, it loses that value completely and it becomes something completely different. So I think that when it comes to using language and, you know, being frivolous with our choices and, you know, not acknowledging the weight that it carries, that's a dangerous thing to do. You know, it's reckless. It's, you know, it doesn't consider how impactful that can be for somebody else and how it has a ripple effect. Right. You know, and it's funny when you mentioned journalism, when I was in grade 12, I'm going to tell you a little side story here.
Sure.
When I was in grade 12, I went and got myself a full-time job because I wanted to go to this private school. And so I went to this private school for the 1 year, and I was taking a journalism course because I actually, at the time, my, you know, one of my main dreams or goals or something was to go into journalism. My aunt had been a journalist. My uncle had been a journalist. And so I was taking this class at school, and even though I had, like, straight A's and everything, including both of my other English courses that I was in, this journalism class that I was taking my prof didn't like me, and she gave me an F. And it was the only F I ever received in life, and she told me I would never make it as a journalist.
Did she give a rationale, or was it just simply, like, spite?
I don't even know. I couldn't tell you the answer.
That's...
Maybe I was attitude-y. Maybe I had something to say, and she didn't like it.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then that's entirely a subjective mark and not based on, you know, performance. So, I mean, but then you have in some way become a journalist of a different sort because you chronicle things within your music. And do you consider yourself like that kind of approach to a songwriter?
I actually haven't thought about it from a journalism lens, but I guess in a way, like, I think the way I've always viewed it is more like, you know, sharing our stories, and yeah, that's a new spin. I like that. I think I'm going to have to sit on that for a minute before I could actually internalize it.
Sure.
Yeah. Good one. I like it.
No problem. you recently did a song with Tanya Tagaq.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about the experience of, like, is it the Manitoba connection that now that she's in Brandon, you guys connected, or the Indigenous music circles, or, like, how did you guys kind of come into each other's orbit to do this song together?
You know, it's hilarious. For the longest time, we called her the unicorn because we've been in the same community and the same circle for, like, over a decade, and we had never met until about a year ago. And it was at a Canadian Music Week event in Toronto. It was like 9 a.m. I was there to sing a song at the opening for this big breakfast thing that was happening, and she was on the panel, and nobody had had coffee yet, and I was there singing Nobody Knows, which is a pretty heavy song, and it was like, you know, before everybody had had coffee. And then we bumped into each other, and we were both so stoked to meet each other. And, you know, I was like, oh my God, I've been wanting to meet you forever. And she was like, oh my God, I've been wanting to meet you forever. And then I was like, oh my gosh, we should work on a song together. And she was like, I was just about to say that. And then it just sort of manifested from there in this, like, frenzied 2-minute conversation that we had after having been eluding each other for years and years and years.
So then the actual creation of the song, was that something that you hashed out, you know, by text or email or things like that? Or how did you kind of...
Yeah, so it was the song. The song was something that I actually wrote in advance and thought, oh, this would be something that would be perfect for us to partner on in some way. So the song began just on a hand drum and my vocals, and then once we started working with her and the producer, it manifested into, you know, sort of this anthem-y kind of tune that it is now.
So did you hear it as that anthemic kind of piece in your head when you were kind of working on the skeleton of it, or did that kind of come out in collaboration with Tanya?
Both. I heard it in my head, but I couldn't put my thumb on it. So it was one of those things where the producer that I worked with, he's the one that really found that pulse, because I was, you know, using the most flowery of words to describe what I was hearing, right? I was just like, I need it to be heavy, but I need it to be powerful, but I don't want it to be too loud. And I, you know, so it was like one of those where I'm just using all of these adjectives to describe the sound that I'm hearing, but without being able to be like, okay, now I want you to play this chord, and then put in this instrument. Like, it wasn't that detailed in terms of what I was hearing. But he was able to actually take that sound that I was describing and create the space. And then when we brought Tanya in, because Tanya came in after the fact, when we brought her in, it was like that missing puzzle piece that completed the whole package, because her sounds, like, there's, you know, like, she comes in right off the top as well. Or right before the launch, I guess, into the chorus. And it was definitely the driving force in that moment, right? And so I feel happy that each of us played a really important and integral role in the song and creating, you know, the story and putting our own breath of life into it. You know, like, without any one of us, it just wouldn't have been the same.
Right. Like you said, mm-hmm. you needed that puzzle piece to complete it.
Exactly.
So we're going to give that one a listen. What's the best social media way to keep track on you? Like, where are you most kind of active for folks to kind of keep tabs?
I would say I'm on Instagram all the time.
Yeah.
I have Twitter, I have Facebook. I do keep those updated, but in terms of like, if you want to interact with me, head over to the gram. I'll chat with you there.
Perfect. And we can see your dog too.
And you can see my dog. She's a cancer survivor.
Iskwe, two chances to see her this weekend. Don't miss out. Playing the Jazz Winnipeg Festival, Old Market Square, Saturday night. And then, of course, the Spence Neighborhood Picnic / Block Party at Merck on Sunday afternoon. Both free events. Don't miss your chance. Iskwe, thanks very much for taking some time and looking forward to seeing you back here in Winnipeg on the weekend.
Of course. It's good to talk to you, and I'll see you soon.
Well, their latest record is Gentle Leader. Peach Kelly Pop, Bring It to the Handsome Daughter on June 20th. And joining me by phone from the road, Allie Hanlon. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So not only do you have Gentle Leader, you also have Witch Witch, because you guys kind of released two things in very short order. In terms of touring them, right now, set list-wise, are you trying to do both or leaning heavier on the full length, or what's kind of the...
That's actually a great question. When I recorded the full-length album, one of my goals was to create songs that we would be able to recreate live and that we would have fun playing live. And then with the Witch Witch EP, I wasn't really focusing on that. So I was kind of just, you know, like writing songs that were a little more personal and, so as a result, we're definitely playing more songs off of the full length, with a couple from the EP mixed in there. But yeah.
So how intentional a songwriter are you then? Like, if you're thinking, you know, I want to write kind of more personal, intense stuff for this release versus, you know, this stuff will translate for the road. What, like, do you go into each recording or writing session with a very specific goal in mind?
That is something that I've learned over time. So when I first started to write music, it was more like with the EP where I was just enjoying writing songs. And I think they came from a more personal place. And then as I've been doing this for a bit longer, I kind of realized like that the songs that I write, I'm going to have to perform them live, you know, every night on tour for usually like in total, I think 2 or 3 months after the album comes out, you know, over various tours. So I'm definitely more aware of that. And as a result, I consider that when I'm writing songs, which maybe that sounds kind of weird to kind of write songs specifically with whether they would be fun to perform live, but that's definitely something that I do now.
Is that like a lesson you had to kind of learn the hard way, like having written personal songs and then had to kind of go into those emotions on a nightly basis?
Yeah. So it was something that I realized with like lyrics, but also with writing songs that became difficult to perform live with the band members that I had, or just, you know, the format that I was, the format of band that I was traveling with. So typically we play with a drummer, a lead guitar player, a rhythm guitar player, and a bass player. Mm-hmm. And then there's two or three people singing, and you can do a lot with that. But when you're writing songs that have like multiple keyboard lines and like three-part harmonies and, you know, lots of different layers, it can be hard to recreate that with a four-piece band. So definitely with the new full-length album, I was aware of only writing and recording songs that we would be able to recreate almost exactly when we were performing.
Now, on the current tour, is there four of you, or... In one photo that I saw on Instagram, there was three, and I thought maybe one the person who's taking the photo makes the fourth. And
yeah, sometimes that happens. This specific tour is with myself and Gina and Sophie Negrini,
and that's our bass player and lead guitar player, respectively, and Andrew Bassett, my longtime friend from Portland, is playing drums for us.
And they're all on the record, so everyone kind of has the familiarity with this record front to back?
Exactly.
So you're Andrew from Portland. I mean, you came from Ottawa, moved to L.A. How did you get hooked up with a Portland drummer?
Well, actually, when I was living in Ottawa, I played in a band called The White Wires, and we went on a tour in Europe in 2011, and it was with a band from Portland called The Mean Jeans, and Andrew plays in that band, and that's how I met him, and we became good friends, and he's actually toured with Peach Kelly Pop as our drummer in the past, and so I was looking for someone that was free to do this tour, you know, that could leave for 5 weeks, and he was available, and he's an incredible drummer, so that worked out really nicely.
I have to imagine when you first met him that there was no thought of, like, down the road I might call on this person to play with me or something. It was just simply, hey.
I definitely didn't know that when I met him, but he's the kind of person who's up for, you know, an adventure, so I felt like it wasn't that crazy to call him, and he accepted. So here we are.
Here you are. I understand it, you did the record, you had it completed, and then found a label. Is that right?
Yes.
Was that just you had the record in terms of the material and had some recording time, or like was that I want to shop this around, or?
Yeah. I wrote and recorded the record, and then after it was completely finished, looked for a label. And I didn't realize, I guess this is the first time that I had sort of sought out a new label, or, you know, I had kind of like worked with my friends in the past, and it had just been really easy. And I just kind of wrote, like, I would write like Burger Records or my friends who had labels, and they would put out the records, and, you know, we were kind of like on a friend basis. And I was trying to do something a bit different this time, and I didn't realize like that I didn't know how that worked really and what the process is like. And you know, I didn't know that it's really hard to get in touch with labels. Like, they don't really like you to contact them directly. You kind of have to like sometimes know someone that works at the label. And so I found myself learning a lot and realizing what I didn't know about the music industry. And I ended up just, I guess, like talking to other people that play in bands and asking them what their experiences were with the labels they were working with. And I had heard really great things about Mint Records. And, you know, like from the artist's perspective, that they're fantastic to deal with. And so I ended up writing them, and they were responsive. And, I was really, really happy that they were interested in putting out the LP. And then they also said that in this big gap of time between when we agreed to do the LP together and when it was actually going to come out, that I could do this EP while, you know, during the like 8 or 9 months that we were going to be waiting. So, yeah, it's definitely a good fit. I think maybe because we're both Canadian, I'm not sure, but I feel really comfortable with them, and I'm really impressed with how great of a job they're doing.
You mentioned that, you know, folks said it was a good label to deal with as an artist. Like, were there specific kind of examples or like instances
so I was looking to work with a label that would really help the album do well. You know, they would put a lot of effort into you know, making sure people knew about it and making sure it's in record stores, and then also just on like a day-to-day basis when we're exchanging emails and planning things. Like, I really appreciate that they're responsive and they're organized and they're positive, you know? So there's lots of different ways in which a label can be, you know, good or bad to deal with, and they are very organized, and they genuinely care about the bands and the music that they're, you know, that they're working with, and it definitely shows. And on my end, you know, I put everything into my music. I spend a lot of money on making it, and I, you know, it means a lot to me. And so I really appreciate working with a label that, you know, puts in a lot of time and energy. And I truly feel like they're doing the best they can, and it makes me really happy. So
in praising Mint on Instagram, you also wrote that the music industry often sucks ass. And
yeah.
I'm curious, like, have there been specific instances or experiences that have, like, kind of tainted or not necessarily soured your view?
Yeah. So without naming names.
Sure. I'm not saying, like, tell me A&R rep so-and-so is.
No. But, I mean, there have been specific things, like, where I've realized that it's pretty common for labels to not be very transparent about what's happening with the finances. And I've experienced that, and it made me really angry, you know, because I gave my product to someone and they're generating money and I'm seeing none of it. And that is actually very common, you know, even with people who, you know, they say they're your friend, and then, you know, something like that happens and you're kind of surprised, you know. And after experiences like that, which I had heard about, and I didn't expect them to happen to me, even though I've heard that they're common, after they actually did, I was more careful, you know, and I was kind of weary of people, even though they seemed like they had my best interests in mind. I really wanted to make sure that, you know, that we had a contract and we were going to be on the same page no matter what. And Mint was, you know, like a breath of fresh air with, their honesty and transparency and, you know, just helping the band feel comfortable. So,
right.
Yeah.
You guys, you played in Japan not too long ago, and I noticed your Twitter handle right now has katakana writing on it, and obviously some of your musical choices, you know, like Hello Kitty knife. Have you had like a long time fascination with Japan, or like what's kind of your connection to Japanese culture?
I feel like even as a child, I grew up really attracted to pop culture, so I loved Sailor Moon. I don't know why, but as a child, I was obsessed with it, with, the stories and the characters, and just the way it looked was amazing. And I think, from an early age, I've been attracted to the pop culture there, the TV shows and the music and the art. And even as a grown up, I still love it. And I think there's just something about what I inherently enjoy and the art that I create that is, you know, that they also enjoy.
I was going to ask if you resonate with them in the same way.
Exactly. Yeah. So when we go to Tokyo, I feel the most I feel like the people there appreciate and connect to our music and kind of our energy the most out of anyone that we've ever played for. So we've been going to Tokyo pretty much on a yearly basis for 4 years now, and it's always just an extremely positive experience. And I feel like very, very understood when I go there. And I'm not exactly sure why, but I think, you know, just having the same interests and kind of enjoying the same style of things is probably why.
Have you had any kind of like creative epiphanies or kind of like realizations when you've been on these yearly jaunts to Japan? Like, is there something that's either seeped into your music or, you know, merch or style or things like that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, merch is funny because I've brought like lots of different things to sell, obviously t-shirts and our records. And then I used to bring like huge posters. And anyways, I don't know if this is interesting, but I just realized in Japan, they really appreciate small things because I think the living spaces are often smaller. And so I was inspired by seeing everyone's merch. They had really creative, cool things that were all smaller. So, you know, small keychains or really interesting buttons. And I was inspired because here we can have bigger merch items, but we travel in a minivan on tour. And this time all of my merch is very compact. And I was inspired by what I saw in Japan. And it has served us well as we travel in a very small vehicle for touring. So yeah, merch has inspired me, but also just the passion that the bands perform with there. There's no one trying to be cool and casual and laid back. Everyone is, you know, excited and, you know, really showing their enthusiasm. And that's something that I enjoy doing on stage. And whenever I go there, it just makes me want to, or I guess not feel dorky doing that, you know? And, you know, I think lots of people on stage try and be really cool and maybe look like they don't care, you know, but I like to, you know, present myself on stage as being happy to be there, which I usually am, you know, happy to be there. And I want to connect with the audience and put on the best show that I can. And that's what they do in Japan. And that is, or, you know, from what I've seen, that's what they do. And it really inspires me.
Well, I am enthusiastic to see the show at the Handsome Daughter on June 20th. Before we let you go, I want to get you to pick a track, either off Gentle Leader or Which, that we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking that song, I'd love to hear it.
Let's do Black Cat 13 because it's one of my favorite songs to play live. And I feel like it kind of encapsulates the energy that you will see if you come to the show.
Perfect. Allie, thanks very much for taking some time and safe travels in the interim.
All right. I'll see you soon. Thanks so much for calling.
Just
We're back here on Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. And right before the break, we heard from Toronto act Baby Cages and a track called Gold from their forthcoming record Bitter Melon. And speaking of forthcoming, they are going to be coming to town July 24th. No details yet on the exact location, but apparently A La Mode, one of the openers for that show. And I'm in the midst of trying to schedule an interview with them before they come to town. Stick around here on Thank God It's Free Range for that one. Speaking of sticking around for interviews, right after this next musical selection, we are going to hear from Cadence Weapon, who is in town next week playing the Jazz Winnipeg Festival. However, it won't be me doing the interview. Earlier this week on Wednesday on This Is 393, the Studio 393 Graffiti Gallery production, our pal Ness, Elliot Walsh, talked to his pal, Rolly Pemberton, a.k.a. Cadence Weapon. And I'm going to replay that interview to give it a little more shine, to play it at a different hour and remind folks that they should go check out this Polaris-nominated artist who is touring on the strength of his self-titled record. But before we get to that, we're going to hear a new cut from Rye, or rather a remix of a new cut from Rye. Little Dragon remixing Phoenix from Blood, the latest from Rye. Rye will be in town playing the Winnipeg Folk Festival, sadly up against Courtney Barnett. That is some rough scheduling. I am trying to line up an interview with Rye in advance of that Winnipeg Folk Festival date. They are currently touring in Europe, but fingers crossed when they get back, we can get them on the phone to talk to Mike Milosh. But here it is, Phoenix, Little Dragon Remix from Rye, 101.5 UMFM.
I finally brought my fader.
Of Edmonton, Alberta. How are you, sir?
I'm amazing.
Yo, are you ever like, you always seem like the man of positivity.
I'm very
ever not?
I'm a very positive person. And it's because I feel like I kind of like have to be, you know, I have to, you know, like to continue with the mission, you know, to keep, you know, in the music industry, it can be hard, you know, out there. And it's like, I think my positivity is what's kept me around for so long, you know?
Interesting. You've gone through a few phases in terms of going the independent route completely by yourself and then going with a label that basically disappeared. Am I correct?
Yeah, they don't exist anymore.
And then now this route, which is with E1, is that correct also?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so like, What's made you actually just go this route once again with a partner and I guess with label support, so on and so forth, as opposed to just going in on with yourself or another small indie?
I think I've just started to see music a little bit differently. You know, despite the fact that I'm signed with a label again, it's a very different situation. My first label that I was on, Upper Class, they were really, really small. They had basically no infrastructure. So I, despite being in the industry, I didn't really benefit from any of those kind of industry things that you typically expect. Whereas now, you know, working with E1, I feel like, you know, they've helped me a lot, like making connections with different producers and stuff and, you know, having access to different studios. And it's really like allowed me to improve my music in a way that I've always wanted to do.
And you say improve, so not make different, just improve. So what does that necessarily mean to you in terms of, are you talking about like in terms of beat wise, quality of mixes, quality of I guess levels of producers and their critical acclaim? Like, what does that mean to you in terms
of?
Well,
I feel like you can always improve. You know, no matter what, like, I don't think I was ever a person who would be like, oh, yeah, my album's perfect or something, you know. But the way I see it is, you know, working with different levels of producers, having access to, you know, better equipment, you know, like just these are some things that being connected with the label has helped me with. But it's also based on the way that I think about music has changed. And I think it changes with every album. Like I have a different vision for each album that I do. And, you know, right now, you know, the ideas that I'm having are more attuned to me just recording as much as possible, recording with as many different people as possible, different producers, different musicians, and just getting into as many different studio situations as possible and just seeing what comes out of that.
Is it a matter of, oh, wow, now you just opened up a can of worms, though.
Mm-hmm.
it's a matter of soaking up the knowledge of those experiences working with the different producers in different settings, as opposed to how do you create or battle creating a cohesive work if you're in all those different environments working with different people?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, the first two albums I made, I produced them all myself, and I was pretty much the only vocalist on them. So I found that they were very, when I go back to listen to them, it's a very solitary experience. It's very, I'm in my head. It's very introspective and very personal, but it also feels like a little lonely too. And it feels like it was made almost solely just for myself, right? Whereas, you know, working with other people, it allows me to, you know, think of things kind of differently, perceive songs differently, you know, have that kind of outside input. You know, it's really, I think it's really helped my music a lot. But yeah, back to the core of your question. What was the question again?
the next part basically would be how would you, as a person that consumes albums in that habit, was it a battle necessarily trying to find how to create that cohesive record?
Like, that is never a problem for me, because even if I work with a bunch of other producers, it's still going to be kind of executive produced by me.
Right.
You know, like it still goes through my vision and through like the Cadence Weapon lens. So, you know, here's an example, like working with Jacques Green, he did the beats for High Rise and The Host. And, you know, we would get together and I would talk about, you know, some of my ideas. He'd talk about some stuff. We'd like listen to music. We'd just like kind of hang out. And then he would just start jamming something out. I'd be like, yo, like extend that part. And we'd have this dialogue the whole time that we were making it. And, you know, in a way, it's like you look at how somebody like Kanye makes music, right, where he has, you know, an army of different producers, but they're all working towards a goal that is kind of set out by him.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the methodology I'm using nowadays.
Nice. All the beats that were created on there, even with some of your homies, were they in advance? Like, did they present you with a skeleton, or were you sitting in there from jump and then something was created from scratch right in front of you and you all having that conversation, just extending on the last answer that you gave?
Oh, yeah, it's different pretty much for every song. You know, there's some examples of me just getting a beat from a person and then writing a song. Like, that's an example. Large is like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the only thing I did was I, you know, made some slight arrangement differences. Like, I would take it and, you know, chop it up and be like, okay, can you change your arrangement to be more like this? You know, but for the most part, they sent me a bunch of beats and I selected that one, you know?
Yeah.
Or another example is Infinity Pool, where, you know, we would look through a bunch of like just beat sketches, just very, very skeletal ideas. And then we, you know, would start just vibing out together and be like, okay, let's extend this into like a full song, you know? So there's that, and then there's like just from the ground up, you know, which is how we did High Rise. You know, there was just no music, and then there was music. It's nice.
Yeah. Ideas for this record, the Cadence Weapon self-titled. Did you go in there with a bunch of ideas overall? Like, I know sometimes that as a creator of music or even just written work, did you have a cohesive idea of what you wanted the project to be overall, or organically it kind of changed through time as you went through every recording session?
Yeah, you know, I had some vague ideas about what the overarching sound of the album would be. I knew I wanted to have other producers, and I knew I wanted it to be, you know, emblematic of all the different kinds of music I've made in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, lyrically, I tried to be very free. You know, that was really important to me. I didn't want to come in very regimented in how the album was going to be. Because in the past, I've actually gone as far as starting off with song titles and then writing music based on what the title is and whatever the concept is, and then making a beat. you know? So it was like the totally reverse way that maybe you would expect to make music. But it was like, and then I wouldn't veer from that. I'd make those 12 songs, 14 songs or whatever, and then those were the songs. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't make any other music.
Huh.
Yeah, it was like a very rigid way of doing it. Whereas this album, I just would record, you know, every few days, every week, whenever I was somewhere else. You know, I was just recording constantly to the point where I had, you know, over 80 songs that I made working on this album, right?
Nice. How did you go down dwindling which songs are going to make it on the record and which ones were going to be saved for, say, a single here and there?
Yeah, I think I knew which ones I liked the most, you know, like when they would happen, I'd be like, oh yeah, that feels like right. You know, it was just kind of an intuitive experience, you know. Obviously, a song like My Crew, you're like, oh, that's going to make the album. You know, it's just like feels good. But throughout the process, you know, I found that I was kind of making similar songs, you know, like without consciously doing it. I would be writing songs that had similar themes or similar ideas. And I think I gravitated towards those songs being together.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, that was the question I was going to be leading to was, were you picking basically the bangers that you thought or the ones that just fit best together?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Like, obviously, the logic typically with this process would be just get them 12 most banging tracks, you know, that are of the sound of today or whatever. But I actually totally didn't do that. I just got my favorite songs. Some of those are like the more upbeat, hype, banging tracks. But then there's some more songs that are, I don't think have any commercial viability.
Yeah.
That are the weirdest tracks I made. You know, like a song like The Host or, you know, Infinity Pool. They're very different musically than pretty much anything else you would hear. But that's always going to be part of my music. So I definitely, you know, I like having that balance, you know.
Consciously have that balance. I like that. So let's talk about your influences on this record. And you have a new single out, Be About.
Yeah.
Which is pretty dope. You mentioned quite a bit, and since we're on radio in Winnipeg, you are listening to 101.5 UMFM. This is 393, is the radio program. You mentioned PNC quite a bit on interviews. You did a Red Bull Academy little write-up also on the label and its writers. But also grime enters in quite a bit into your influences. Could you speak on both of those and how they've influenced your music and how you create them?
Yeah, it's interesting. You could say my music overall is a cross-section between those two things, and maybe even including, you know, French house and early 2000s kind of club music. But yeah, when I was younger, it was really, I was really into underground rap, you know, from around the world. And then I discovered Buck 65, and that led me to the whole Peanuts and Corn Crew, which really changed my life, because these were rappers from, you know, the area that I'm from. And that wasn't something I was super used to at the time. You know, it was really exciting, you know, because it was people talking about things that I could relate to, for really, arguably, for the first time. You know, like hearing songs like, for me, that my favorite Peanuts and Corn release is the Hip Hop Wieners with Pipsqueak and John Smith. So I just feel like that record was just like so cohesive, and every beat was so good by McEnroe, and it was just so different. You know, like hearing a song where they're just talking about spending all their money on organic food, you know,
yeah.
Or the like Suge Knight just talking about, you know, not getting paid by an internet distribution company. You know, this is like such a specific thing. You know, these songs are hyper specific. They're not for everyone, and it's just their background. You know, and they really were just who they were. You know, and that really encouraged me so much, because, you know, coming from Edmonton, you know, there's rappers in Edmonton, obviously, and there were rappers around, but that was really the first moment where I felt like there was some music that that sounded like me, you know? And it wasn't just, and it was, I felt like that with the underground rap and with Peanuts and Corn, all the MCs like that. But I also felt the same way about UK grime, you know, because, you know, it's these people coming from a very, like, somewhat grim, cold environment that reminded me so much of Edmonton, you know, and it's these young people just rapping about their urban existence over these harsh electronic beats, you know, and there was humor and, you know, there was just so much life to the music. And it became really one of my, like, life's passions is grime music. And you hear that a lot in the new track. It's essentially a grime track. And it's me really paying homage. It was we wanted to do a grime track, but I didn't want to be a parody. You know, it's okay. Like I didn't want to do like a UK like accent. You know, I feel like, you know, it'd be too weird.
There's I got put on to Polish reggae, and this debate started to go in my head of when does it become cultural appropriation?
Or
absolutely homage, like it's become something else. So it's like you love UK grime,
right?
But you're not gonna go. You're gonna still have your Edmontonian accent on there. Look, they call them Edmontonians, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But it's definitely that's played an influence on your work and how you approach music,
I actually like that. That's a really good question, kind of, because I feel like people have this issue with cultural appropriation so much in music. You know, like everyone was talking about how Bruno Mars was appropriating music or something. But I feel like it can't really be appropriation if it comes from somebody who learned everything about it and paid homage to it in a respectful way. That's I think the thing that sets things apart, you know, like you can, in my opinion, you can be inspired by the background and the components of a certain style of music, but, and as long as you're respectful and, you know, true to yourself in how you use those elements, I really believe that would make it not cultural appropriation.
And it's funny that you also mentioned that you consciously and jokingly, even when you said it, of you're not going to put on a London accent for it, basically. There's a line that definitely makes it cultural appropriation or a parody that needs to not be crossed.
Right, and that's something that, you know, I've been mindful about just being a rapper from Edmonton.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this, you know, back in the day, it would have been like, yo, I'm going to, you know, rap over these like fake primo beats and pretend I'm from Brooklyn when I'm not, you know, and that was the sound of a lot of rap. And there was a lot of rap from Canada that was like that, that I always found it was very confusing because, you know, the people doing that are actually from like Victoria or something.
Yeah.
You know?
What made you venture out into creating your own sound, your own pocket, basically? Because I mean, all this music was around, and I know that you're a bit younger than the PNC cats and others that came up in the Edmonton scene.
Mm-hmm.
But what made you find your own lane? Because there is something that dictates this is real hip hop, but you came of that age of where, yo, I'm going to go for self and try to create something that is rap, but my brand of rap, basically.
I think there's two reasons for why. I would say one of the reasons is I used to try and get beats from other people, and I would rap over them, and I would just kind of feel like it just didn't feel like me, you know, like it just didn't suit me properly, and, you know, it just wasn't appropriate. And that led me to start making beats for myself. You know, just on my computer and just, you know, essentially spending hours and hours and hours of just teaching myself how to use these programs. And that really contributed to me making a new sound because that was around the era when, you know, Fruity Loops was just kind of popping, you know, like nobody really was using the computer to make music that much. You know, now it's a very, very common thing. But That's one reason. And the other reason is I never really, you know, like I have friends in the Edmonton rap scene and everything, but I never really felt like I was totally embraced, you know, initially. Mm-hmm. You know, like I definitely looked different and sounded different and dressed different. And I was just so different from everything that was happening, you know, that I really became very proud of that. And it made me just like push further and harder in that direction to just be the most like full embodiment of my creativity I possibly could.
Gotcha.
Absolutely.
All right, so this has been an interview with Cadence Weapon. We'll be playing June 20th at the Goodwill. Last thing, I guess. Yo, what track should we play?
I think you should play High Rise, which is produced by Jacques Green. That's the current single from the album. And everybody check out my new single, Be About, produced by Eton Tobin.
When city life has got you down, and all day you search around, get on your feet and off the ground. Let's move into a high rise. City life can drive you mad. I've seen it happen, it's so sad. Just log out, stop checking ads, and move into a high rise. Who needs community? Not me and you, or you and me. Swimming pools all in our suite. Beats the view on College Street. Who needs the shops and schools? Not you and me, or me and you. Baby girl, you know it's true. We're moving to a high rise. Moving to a high rise. High rise. No compassion, call your MP. No reaction, disrespected, looking glass, misdirected, more construction. Home consumption, mass defection, so disruptive, disconnected, cash reduction. Ask them why, get interrupted, more distraction, slow production, more corruption. Priced out, lights out, great heights, no view, white flight. Trying times, highly dense, private lives, rising rent, open house, bidding war, working poor, massive debt, family loan, overstressed. Gentrifier, take me higher, sell it to the rich and buy it. Needs community, not me and you, or you and me. Swimming pools all in our suite. Beats the view on College Street. Who needs the shops and schools? Not you and me, or me and you. Baby girl, you know it's true. We're moving to a high rise. Moving to a high rise. High rise. Get over the underground. Come see us in our high rise.